Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the happier hump day happy hour. Dom, you're still wrong the entire hour one. You were wrong the whole hour. But you know, 63% of the time we get it right every time.
I tell you what, Crudy, I'm training for the Ironman. I'm going to do an Ironman, and I'm training right now. I paid my dues. I got up this morning, I worked out, I'm running the Ironman. Does that mean I'm in the Ironman?
Well, certainly you could be. It doesn't mean you will successfully complete the Ironman.
come on.
Just stop being so wrong. It's really, it's annoying. I'm
can't
asking
believe he actually, on behalf of this guy's actually listener. Running, man. I mean, he's so screwed.
I'm going to move on just because you're so annoying. Senate advances bill to protect same-sex marriage in federal law.
Hey.
62 votes to end a filibuster today, Dom.
Fantastic.
All except for, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson.
No, he was not one of the Republicans. He was a nay.
Dominic, in a 62-37 vote, senators agreed to end debate on the bill and advance it. 12 Republicans joined all 50 members of the Democratic caucus to vote in support of the bill, surpassing the 60 votes needed to avoid a filibuster. And Dom, you and Jennifer Rubin think that this could kind of foretell of a big deal.
It could be a big deal. I think it continues to show how far the Republican Party is from, you know, mainstream America. And granted, as we talked about the other day, the opinion has shifted in the last 20-25 years on gay marriage dramatically here in the state of Wisconsin and across the country. But Rubin says this: the Senate's victory on same-sex marriage should terrify the GOP, because they're not terrified enough after just getting shellacked at the midterms. Let's jump into this piece just a little bit. The Senate advanced a bill on Wednesday to codify protections for same-sex marriage, attracting enough Republicans to overcome the filibuster, taking a moment to consider the breathtaking shift in American attitudes that this represents. In 2008, President Barack Obama was not willing to embrace same-sex marriage. Now, even the Mormon Church has endorsed the bill. A critical mass of Republicans.
I thought that
understand.
Was a joke when I first saw that. I've seen the Book of Mormon.
I watched South Park.
The Mormon Church has endorsed the marriage equality bill, Tom. That is real growth, I would
say.
The
Respect for Marriage Act. A little bit more here. The critical mass of Republicans understand that same-sex marriage is here to stay. Whatever their personal views, they grasp that opposition to it signifies a level of bigotry even many GOP voters are willing to tolerate. The simple political reality is this. Outside deep red enclaves, Republicans cannot maintain their anti-same-sex marriage stance without marginalizing themselves. It's part of a slow recognition that their adoption of Christian nationalist positions alienates a substantial portion of voters.
You don't think?
There might be some risk for Republicans embracing same-sex marriage. Right-wing gadflies such as Ben Shapiro have already called to excommunicate Republicans who support same-sex marriage. It's possible that Wednesday's vote sets up incumbent Republicans to face primary challenges from Christian nationalists. And therein lies the problem for the GOP. Republicans face a number of quandaries these days that force them to choose between loyalty to the mega cult and general election viability. Do they reject former President Donald Trump in the primaries and risk him dragging down the party if he runs as an independent in 2024? Do they recruit more non-election deniers for House, Senate, and state offices, understanding that those who question the legitimacy of elections are proven losers?
Dom, let me carry a little of the weight here. but no question looms larger than how they intend to win office while maintaining the support of Christian nationalists whose views are antithetical to a supermajority of Americans. And this goes beyond same-sex marriage. We saw what support for rigid abortion bans did to Republicans in the midterms. Tell you what Robin Voss is proposing here in just a minute, folks. Michigan went entirely blue, largely because independent women went overwhelmingly for Democrats to protect abortion rights. But if pro-forced birth Republicans try to course correct dropping proposals for a national ban, they risk offending a large constituency. As Robert P. Jones, president of the Public Religion Research Institute, explains in a Substack post, the midterms serve as a reminder that, and here's a quote, an overwhelming majority of Americans do not favor extreme policies like bans on abortion. As Tim Michaels, even in a red state like Kentucky, voters rejected an anti-abortion amendment. Now, Rubin points out, he points out that the polling was regularly revealed that nearly 7 in 10 Americans and 6 in 10 midterm voters said abortion should be legal in all or most cases. That is mainstream view on abortion, but it's far from the mainstream view amongst elected Republicans. Indeed, Jones writes, the percentage saying abortion should be illegal in all cases has dropped from 23% to 11% from 2020 to 2022. That's a pretty substantial shift, Dom. Put differently, Republican officials find themselves held hostage by their most extreme primary voters. Virtually all GOP presidential primary candidates will feel compelled to adopt a strict anti-abortion stance to have any hope of winning primaries. Meanwhile, if Republicans win the House majority, I think they have, Dom, it might be impossible for them to resist the urge to put a nationwide abortion ban on the House floor.
Do it.
The next time Republicans are up for election, potentially with more abortion-related measures on the ballot, they might feel the wrath of voters again. And to some extent, rigid opposition to gun reform lands Republicans in a similar place as voters, even Republicans, warm to reasonable limits on weapons of war. Republicans are caught between the demands of the Second Amendment's extremist and the desire to avoid being labeled is out of touch with the fears many parents have for their children's safety. Republicans are finding out there is a penalty to be paid for cultural extremism, but they have yet to show that they're capable of preserving general election viability. Over the next 2 years, as mega forces double down in the GOP House caucus and Trump fights with primary opponents for the support of the GOP base, Democrats will be delighted to watch Republicans marginalize themselves. During that time, Democrats will look for opportunities to put measures related to abortion and other cultural issues on the ballot in 24. If that approach worked to drive Democrats to the poll in 22, there's no reason to think it won't work again in 24.
Right.
And Rubin concludes as thus, this is what happens when a national political party becomes almost entirely dependent on a group whose views are far out of the American mainstream. One of the great revelations of the 2022 midterms was that Democrats can run on cultural issues and win outside of deep blue districts and states. They'd be foolish not to try to recreate that success. Yes.
Yes. Jennifer Rubin. Yes, absolutely. It's just another thing that Republicans are failing on. And let's not, this Christian nationalism, this is religion. This is what drives them. Their faith in one particular religion because they think that God told you not to lay with another man, but you're fine with your shellfish, you're fine with your shrimp, you're fine with the wools and linens. But for some reason, this is the one that you're going to die on the wall for. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, and I think a lot of Americans, obviously, the attitudes have changed, and the Republicans can't help themselves. Are you now? And they're going to have this now from now on until Trump is in the pokey and MAGA has a cigarette put out on its ass. They're going to have to decide whether or not they think they can walk the line between getting elected and, you know, having MAGA support. How do you do that? You don't.
844-967-2789. We got some patient callers. Here's a infrequent flyer, but a friend of ours. Hassel calling in from Sheboygan, where the Schmingies live. Welcome, Hassel.
Hey, Hass, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, excellent. Your reading alouding has gotten much better. Nice.
Has it?
Well done,
Corey. Really? You know, because it felt kind of sketch to me, but I'll take your word for it.
I hate to see you do all that show prep, but it's really good. Without you, I wouldn't read some of those sites. But also, thank you for all the new shows and the new hosts. They're all really high-end Class A people. And I'm looking forward to your extension of your carbon footprint in Fox Valley and Green Bay. And I hope some of that bleeds over here into the lakeshore, because in the land of LeMahieu and Glenn Beulah Grotman,
there's not
much going on.
Mike, you chastise Dom, you sent me the newspaper from Sheboygan after the midterm elections. And a lot of us have celebrated this as some moral victory for the Democrats. But how were they characterizing the outcome in Sheboygan in the local paper?
As it says on the headline, red all over and a 60-40 split. Two candidates in this area gerrymandered to death, and two running entirely unopposed. A lot of disinformation thanks to quite inferior products down the dial. This is a problem for me.
And Mike?
Yes. Yes, sir.
I realize it's post-dark now, but can you hear the Beast of the East in Sheboygan? 540 AM, WAUK.
Well, I'm dating myself here, but back in the day when I would Skywave skip AM radio stations out of Louisville and Detroit and New York, yeah, you can hear it. It's just that whether or not the local power lines and the bleed over, but yeah, even at this hour, you can still pick it up on a very good car radio.
Well, get yourself and
you
a better
be
car radio.
Pointed in the, you got to be pointed in the right direction, but as I mentioned, for us transients who got to get down I-43 to 94, it's really good all the way into downtown Milwaukee and all the way good down to O'Hare and back, and that's even after the sun goes down. So that's encouraging, and I am assuming that next summer Dom will be spending most of his weekends at every county fair and 4-H fry, showing off his milking skills, because we not like to do remotes. I prefer hawks on State Street, but I expect Dom to be doing some pressing the flesh, as we say.
Hey, Mike, listen, shaking babies and kissing hands, Haas.
Can I get a dig in quickly on the Muscadet?
Real quick. Make it real quick.
Keystone Pipeline. I never heard so much disinformation in my life. Raw oil export ban only.
Sorry, man. That's it. Best to Annalise. Love you, Haas. We'll talk soon.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Be sure you check us out online on Twitter at Devil Radio, on Facebook at the Devil's Advocates Radio.
Dominic, I'm going on the road this weekend. Next you hear from me, I'll be broadcasting from glorious Avery, Wisconsin. WXCE Lake Air, baby. I'll be up there at our new facility. Jim Santel, our fine guest, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, and of course, the host of Morning Cannolis every Saturday morning, 9, right up to the kickoff of the Badger game tomorrow morning at 11. Jim, you'll be the Badger pregame show as you recap. Gotta mention, Jim, what's the 12th headline on the Foxy News right now? If I look down 12 stories on the Foxy News Digital, their take on this special counselor is Trump says he won't partake in special counsel investigation. That is the 12th story on the page on Fox News. They're not exactly accentuating the special counsel appointment. Jim, I don't think Trump will be encouraged to partake in this prosecution so much as be a defendant thereof. What do you think, sir?
It is an odd infinitive to partake. I know that both you and Dom will sometimes partake of good foods and other in the world, and that's a very positive thing to partake in something. But again, criminal investigation and criminal prosecution is not one of those kind of voluntary things that happen. Let's assume that the special counsel now is immediately taking responsibility for this investigation, getting his designation, getting his authorization to go forward. We'll be plainly working on a lot of information already assembled by government investigators, by colleagues with whom he'll be working. And again, all of that will proceed according to the way the Department of Justice normally works. Grand juries, again, plainly convened, already underway, summoning witnesses. It may well be that at some point, one of those grand juries will issue a grand jury subpoena for Donald Trump. It's done that in other circumstances. And under those circumstances, you've got an obligation to show up. What you testify about, you've got some privileges you can certainly invoke under the Constitution, other kinds of privileges. But the decision about whether or not this goes ahead and whether or not Donald Trump approves of it or not, that's not his to make. And in our system of justice and the rule of law, whatever the grand jury decides, whatever the special counsel may recommend in terms of presentation to the grand jury by the attorney general and others, that's a matter for the executive branch to decide. Can involve, if you will, some consultation with Mr. Trump's attorneys, but it is an executive decision to make. And that comes out ultimately from the voices of 26 people or members of the grand jury.
James Santel, our fine guest, host of Morning Cannolis, right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 on Saturdays. Jim, there's also a civil trial going on of the Trump Organization, and I want to turn my attention there. But before I do, Eric Trump, who, of course, is part of that organization, the old man said he would not partake. Eric Trump said the appointment of the special counselor, Jack Smith, is communism. Jim, do you agree with Eric Trump's astute assessment, question mark?
No, it's not, Eric. It's not communism. It is, frankly, if anything, it's just the opposite. It is the separation of powers that we have pursued for 240 years in this country. And it accomplishes, again, not without imperfections, but we deliver basically some rough forms of justice and sometimes some very refined forms of justice as well. This is not communism where a number of people make the decisions. What did I just describe? You've got decisions made by investigators, by prosecutors about how to pursue a case. You've got members of a grand jury who are members of a court entity. Remember, this is not the executive branch. You present this to a grand jury, a court entity. They make a determination about whether or not there is an investigative support, probable cause to find that there is a chargeable offense here. They return an indictment. Judges then review that, their motions, there are all sorts of hearings for suppression. And we ultimately go to a trial where we get a petit jury. I'm just going down the list of constitutional protections that are not true for the most part in communist nations that are a part of our not only tradition, but our practice here. So, Eric, regrettably, he is just plain wrong. Imagine that.
Jim, James Santel, I hope you're sticking around for at least one more segment. Good. We'll get to the civil stuff.
You I said just I was maybe, done, but go ahead.
Let me just throw this one out there. The special prosecutor is going to specifically focus on the Mar-a-Lago secret documents case and persons and entities involved in the attack on the Capitol and the certification of the electoral process. And and Garland specifically said that, you know, anybody who was physically on the ground and any other things that maybe not yet been charged will be taken care of by the local U.S. attorneys in D.C. Jim, is there anything to read into? What do you read into with the separation of these different prosecutions?
Right. So we know that there are something in excess of 900 people who've already been prosecuted by the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office. We talked before about this huge resource draw that accomplishes. That will continue. And so it doesn't affect those people who have been the subjects of those. What he is doing is he is saying, let's focus now. And we also know we've got the Stuart Rhodeses and the Proud Boys, and the Oath Keepers. That's still going on. What he is saying, again, to his good credit, is saying, I'm assigning this special prosecutor responsibility for looking at the top of this. Let's look at the people who are responsible for putting this in place. On those other areas, those continue unaffected by this. Can there be consultation between them? Absolutely. They're all part of the Department of Justice. Yeah. That can happen. Will there be people who perhaps cooperate one to the other? Sure, if it's appropriate to do that. But he's dividing this up not only because it's right to do so, it ensures that this special counsel will have focus and will presumably direct his attention, that of his staff, on just these higher levels. and the others still go ahead.
Our fun guest, James Hentel, former U.S. Attorney. Jim, the Wisconsin Capitol Rotunda is now graced by a gorgeous Christmas tree. And it's been my tradition to go decorate the tree. You want to join me, Jim? I think I got some ornaments left from last year.
It is the holiday spirit and period, both of those.
You know, all I want for Christmas this year is a Trump indictment. And we'll declare it Jack Smith Day. Every day is James Hentel Day, at least when he comes around. And of course, Saturdays, because Morning Cannoli's on 9 to 11. You're going to listen tomorrow morning, but you're going to stick around because Jim's sticking around with us. More Devil's Advocates, more James Hentel. The happier. You're happy, I can tell.
We have top men working on it right now. We have top men working on it right now.
You're listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the happier happy hour. And about, 90 minutes, 2 hours from now, Packers whooping up Tennessee Titan ass and probably covering, I hope. We'll talk about that off air, Dom. Before you get to the update on the Weisselberg trial, I've got one quick update, Dom. Carrie Lake, the election denier running for governor of the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
She had a little video missive earlier today. I want to share it with the audience. It's brief. In a new video posted on Twitter Thursday morning, Carrie Lake neglected to concede against Democrat Katie Hobbs in the Arizona governor's race. Instead, she said she was putting together a legal team to correct the many wrongs in an election she narrowly lost. The only supposed wrong, air quotes, she mentioned in the video was the outrage that affected some tabulators on election day, which officials in Maricopa County said they fixed after adjusting the printer settings. I always get very frustrated when I can't print stuff, Dom. That's very nefarious. I always think it's nefarious when the printer yes, won't work for me. Lake pointed to long waits to vote as something nefarious, citing a man who went to three different polling places due to lines and is not sure his vote was counted. Now, she didn't specify why his vote wouldn't have counted. Again, from her earlier missive, Dom. For 2 years, I've been sounding the alarm about our broken election system here in Arizona. Our elections officials failed us miserably. What happened to Arizonans is unforgivable. She did not concede, Dom.
Nor
I see a lawsuit
concede.
Coming.
Well, of course it is. And so recount it. Have at it. Have at it. I am confident in our electoral process. And if she wants to do something about it, she wants to go to court, just like Trump did with the 61 out of 62 court cases that he lost. You have that right. But if you go and file frivolous BS, they will come after you, as well they should.
Now, do you think her and Wisconsin Republican Secretary of State candidate Amy Loudenbach could call up, you know, like Marjorie Taylor Greene's attorney James Bopp and get a 2-for-1 special on election denialism, Dom? Do you think he'd do him a solid? Because remember in court when they questioned what he was charging, and first and foremost, he was casting aspersions at some other lawyer making $4.50 an hour. And they said, well, do you make that? Oh, way more. You know, so it gets pricey, man. You gotta save where you can. Election denialism doesn't come without cost.
Right.
It's about
it
your
free.
Checkbook and democracy.
844-967-2789. I got a couple of the legal updates, Curdy. Just from CBS, I know you read some of the pieces from the defense attorney talking to Weisselberg, Alan Weisselberg, they keep saying former Trump Organization CFO, but apparently he's not been fired from this position, according to testimony yesterday. But here's what CBS is reporting, just a little information. Weisselberg said Donald Trump, or at times Eric Trump or Donald Trump Jr., signed checks to pay up to $100,000 for private school tuition for Weisselberg's grandchildren. Way to go, Grandpa. Weisselberg said he then instructed the company's controller to deduct the $100,000 from his salary, allowing him to report a smaller income. Copies of some of the checks signed by the Trumps have been shown in court. Weisselberg Weisselberg said the first time Trump signed a tuition check, Weisselberg told him, don't forget, I'm going to pay you back for this. The payback, he said, was a salary reduction. Two Trump Organization entities and Weisselberg are accused of more than a dozen counts of fraud and tax evasion. He entered a guilty plea in August, admitted to charges filed by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, accusing him of receiving more than $1.7 million in untaxed compensation. Weisselberg, as mentioned, is still on the Trump's payroll, has over the first 2 days of testimony described a litany of benefits he and other executives received for which he said their salaries were simply reduced to avoid paying taxes. He said for himself and several other executives, the salary reductions were then mitigated by hefty bonus checks to the executives if they were independent contractors for the Trump Organization entities. Trump said he always wanted to sign the bonus checks before he became president in 2017. The practice ceased during the next 2 years after an internal review led to changes at the company. We're going through a company-wide cleanup process to make sure that since Mr. Trump was now president, everything was being done properly. So not only were they playing the game of providing, you know, taking money, paying for expenses under the guise of business expenses, fraudulent business expenses, and they account for it by reducing their own salary, of course, then they don't have to pay the FICA, and the Trump Organization doesn't have to pay the FICA because it's an expense, right, quote unquote. And then this additional part, this independent contractor, this 1099 status, is also a ruse, man.
A little sketch.
You can't be an employee of an organization and also 1099 the organization, to my understanding. I'm not sure how that works. If you're an employee, you're an employee.
Well, I could see that being the case, Dom. You know, I work for a fine corporation in civic media, and then I have this other side gig I do with you. We're radio stars, man. We got different yeah. hats we wear.
Also, the news, Kurt, it just keeps on coming. Can we honestly say now that Russian money went to Donald Trump? And here's what I mean. Rachel Warner, reporting at the Washington Post, a Republican political strategist was convicted of illegally helping a Russian businessman contribute to Trump's presidential campaign in 2016. Jesse Benton, who was pardoned by Trump in 2020 for a different campaign finance crime months before he was indicted again on six counts related to facilitating an illegal foreign campaign donation. He was found guilty Thursday on all six counts.
Remember when we have seen earlier reporting that perhaps the Russians utilized the NRA to funnel money back to the campaigns of different domestic candidates? Wasn't Ron yes. Johnson on that list?
Was he? I don't recall. I know you have a better memory than I.
Well, I wouldn't bring it up if I wasn't fairly confident.
Elections, quote, reflect the values and the priorities and the beliefs of American citizens, Assistant U.S. Attorney Michelle Parikh said in her closing argument this week. Jesse Benton, by his actions, did damage to those principles. Evidence at trial showed Benton bought a $25,000 ticket to the September 2016 RNC event on behalf of Roman Vasilenko, a Russian naval officer turned multi-level marketer. Multi-level marketing? Well, Crudy, we bring three of your friends and they each bring three of their friends and we can sell you some soap. He's under investigation in Russia for allegedly running a pyramid scheme. You know, multi-level marketing. The donation got Vasilenko a picture with Trump and an entrance to a business roundtable with the future president. Vasilenko connected with Benton through Doug Weed, an evangelical ally of the Bush family who was also involved in multi-level marketing. Vasilenko sent $100,000 to Benton, who was working for a pro-Trump super PAC at the time, supposedly for consulting services. Benton subsequently donated $25,000 to the RNC by credit card to cover the ticket. You know, just a little money laundering action going on there. So, yes, Russian money went to Donald Trump's campaign. You can all say it. And if you're out there Republican, CJ, you know, whatever other Republicans, just so you know that happened.
You know, I was just reading up on Maria Butina and Alexander Torshin. Yes. And the headline here at NPR, this is a couple years old now, about three. NRA was foreign asset to Russia ahead of 2016. New Senate report reveals. Now, that was the Democrat report, Dom, led by Ron Wyden. But the Republicans, they said, oh, that's overblown. You know, you pointing out the fact that Russian money was funneled through the NRA back to Republican senatorial candidates. Nothing to see here. Move along. Just saying.
Just saying.
Now, Ron Wyden sought an IRS probe, Don, but I haven't actually seen any news of that. But what do we hear the Republicans talking a lot about? Got to overturn that decision to hire 87,000 new IRS agents because they're worried they might be exposed.
Well, if not them, certainly their donors?
Probably. 844-967-2789. Yes, I think it is fair to say, Dom, that Russian money certainly was part of Donald Trump's campaign. We've seen a number of convictions. They didn't care where the money was coming from. They were cashing all the checks.
Mm-hmm.
Ruples, mm-hmm. dollars, pounds, lira, whatever, man, bring it all. Now, of course, foreign people, foreign entities are not supposed to put their money into U.S. elections. But then again, you know, your campaign manager is not supposed to work for free, see Paul Manafort, and, you know, his payoff is not supposed to be sharing inside polling from a U.S. presidential candidate with a Russian agent linked to the KGB, see Mr. Kalimnik.
Konstantin Kalimnik, yes. I mean, there's so much. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if people are not going to believe it, they're not going to believe it. They're fine with it. They're fine with it. I don't even know what to say anymore, man. I can only go back so much and repeat.
Cleaned it all up for the Republicans with all those convictions. And oh, yeah. Nothing burger. So, in other words, the Steele dossier, although I've seen it said discredited, I haven't really seen it discredited. Not through the Durham report. Not the allegations made many different ways by the Mueller report. Certainly, we know that Trump was obstructing justice, obstructing the investigation, because he knew he was guilty, Dom. He knew in different ways he had corruptly done business with the Russians. I mean, Michael Cohen gave testimony that effectively Donald Trump was still negotiating with Russia to put a 50-story Trump Tower in Moscow. And what do you always say, Dom? And give Putin the penthouse, the cherry on top. They were actively negotiating that during Trump's first presidential campaign. Of course, he
That's
denied
true.
It
yes.
at the time, but
yes.
it was acknowledged after the fact. You know, only abandoned once he actually won.
Oh, my God, he won. I can't believe he won. You know, this other trial, and maybe you can help me out here, Crudy. With Weisselberg and all this, we have to assume, based on the testimony.
The Trump org trial for civil yes. charges, but if they're successful, they could effectively end the Trump organization, end Trump's real estate holdings. They wouldn't be able to run their own company.
But is this also going to be where the same trial, or is it different when they're talking about the valuations? You know, they'd increase the valuations for, you know, loans, for
that
example,
is,
and
that
then
is
decrease.
That is not what is at trial here. The what right. is at trial is the actions of the CFO, Weisselberg. He has pled guilty already. Now, he is not a cooperating witness with federal prosecutors, which really leaves me in this question mark of what status does he have? Why would you offer him less prosecution? I mean, he's subject to up to 15 years in federal prison. If he does not give any sort of testimony against his former boss, if he's willing to go fall on the sword and then do 5 months, no way, no way. If his testimony is not instrumental to the conviction, in this case, a civil conviction, but there are alleged crimes by this corporation. And if Weisselberg's not giving testimony, if he's saying, oh no, it was all just me, then he needs to do 15 years. Or he can give up, you know, the boss.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, they said to me, I brought it in, and I just, you know, bada, bada, ba, and, you know, that's what happened, you know.
I do know, Dom. I do know. And one last moment to linger on the connection between the NRA and Marina Butina. And I would point out the former presidential candidate, failed candidate, Scott Walker, governor, former governor of Wisconsin. Remember when he met Maria Butina, Alexander Torshin, then he lied about it?
Yes.
And he claimed he met him, like, just in, you know, the masses.
Just
but
a
they
passing.
Were actually these Russian agents. She is now a convicted spy that Scott Walker did greet, according to his own account, in the mother Russian that he learned at Marquette University, he claims. And when he met her and Alexander Torshin, they were heading up the Right to Bear Arms organization. They're the ones that took David in Russia. Clark. They're also the ones linked to the funneling of this money through the NRA. But the wanker claimed, oh, this was just a rope line. I didn't know this woman. Except it was at the VIP room in Nashville of the NRA convention. And then later, Dom, in September, the day after Wanker signed the budget here in the state of Wisconsin and declared his presidential ambitions after running a shadow campaign for nearly a year, guess who was in the crowd? Convicted Russian
Maria
spy.
Maria
Butina, now convicted. Just then.
Now in government in Russia, my understanding.
Scott Walker, he wishes he were in government. Come back. More Devil's Advocates.
It's not personal, son.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, you can hit us up with CJ. You're going to have to wait till Monday, man.
CJ, because I wouldn't take the entirety of your troll call, CJ showed up here at the Devil Radio Studios in Madison. And of course, he's not ever going to get in the door here. I'm not letting that guy in. So he taped on my glass window here, Dom, a little missive question for the Devils from their number one t-shirt winner. CJ swears to this day he was the very first guy that ever got a Devil's Advocates t-shirt. So, I mean, the Republicans have known we were a target since way back, Dom.
Hey, CJ, for the record, number one, if you have it, please wear it. And does it still fit? And send us a picture. That way we'll know.
Here is what his message is. Tag board, he's got to have 5 minutes and, you know, like 45 cents in this message, Dom.
Well, plus the drive time.
If you care about justice accountability, why doesn't A.G. Garland and the Devils and Centel and Flynn care about the big guy bought and paid for by China? And then he has a few other little messages here. Matt Flynn's motto was a lie. Dueling tangents, chickens. Tom Hartman can't defend his argument. And with love, God bless America's number one, CJ. I wish our friend Maggie Dawn were here in studio with us. She's on the phone. Let's go to her. Maggie, CJ sends his love.
Hey, Maggie. Thanks for calling in.
I love love notes like taped in the studio window that sort of look like a very disturbed stream of consciousness.
At least he didn't cut it out of magazines. It's not like a ransom note.
Yeah, right. Seriously. That would take way too long.
And he doesn't read, so he doesn't have magazines. So
yeah, avoid that print media. The online stuff is much, much more reliable.
How you been, sister?
I'm good. Struggling with a little bit of a cold. It was certainly a big couple of week and a half here in Milwaukee County with the election, and we just finalized a budget yesterday. So really, really proud of that work and glad to be through this big push in the beginning of November.
Maggie Dawn, we're always proud of your hard work. We'd be more proud if you'd do a radio show for us to get around here. Come on, sister. What's it going to take? Now that we got you on the air, can we cajole you?
You may just be able to do that, Mike, because this is about to be an incredibly important 2 years leading up to 2024, no doubt. And that indeed was the root of sort of my moment of equipoise about the appointment of a special prosecutor. And that is, Republicans have shown an utter loss of any moral center when it comes to using the tools of government to effectively persecute and prosecute, right, they're political enemies, and it is gaslighting. That's what Donald Trump claims, and it's not a persecution if you actually did these things. If you committed the crimes, you're not being persecuted. You're being appropriately prosecuted, sir, right? And that's the difference here. So, you know, we've seen many of these U.S. attorneys come out since exiting the Trump administration. I believe the last gentleman that wrote a book on this very subject, his name is Berman, out of the Southern District of New York refused to step down under pressure from Bill Barr because he knew effectively the patsy that Bill Barr wanted to put in place to stymie the investigations of the Trump Organization that were occurring in the Southern District. So we know that this happened under Trump, and I don't think Ron DeSantis gives us any reason to think he would not do similarly. And so I think observing what happens with the Republican Congress right now on the House side, they're not interested in observing norms, right? They just want to talk about Hunter Biden's laptop, right? That is it. They want to talk about what I like to call non-issue distractions, invented things, to try to slow down the work of Congress while simultaneously doing absolutely nothing to address inflation or any of the environmental concerns.
Any of the things they ran on, quote unquote, Maggie.
Correct, my friend. So I understand why Garland took this step. In other words, if we do this now, if a Republican gets into the White House in 24, you know, again, their hypocrisy knows no bounds, but at least there would be a standard marker there. And I think most people could understand that pretty simply. But we shall see. I agree with Jim wholeheartedly that this should not slow down the prosecutorial and investigatory process with respect to the Mar-a-Lago documents, as well as Donald J. Trump's direct involvement in the phone calls. And the phone calls that he made in those 3 hours and what, 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes? Like, what was the guy doing in the dining room? We know what.
Right.
It should not. But Maggie, I think there's a probability that this additional step, this special counsel, will slow down this process. I don't think it's going to speed it up. Am I wrong in some way? I mean, when you add a whole nother character and a whole nother chapter, not going to make it go faster.
There's no way it makes it go faster. The question becomes, how much does it slow it down? Right? I share Jim's concern about that. That's why my initial reaction is, why is he doing this? This is completely unnecessary. I would think by this time, and Jim alluded to this, they've been investigating for over 2 years. I would think they have a fairly tight mastery of the facts right now, and either those facts bear out the basis for criminal prosecution or they don't. And again, I agree with Dominic that this isn't precedent setting because we probably won't see this again, but that doesn't prevent folks from attempting to assert these kinds of arguments to avoid prosecution. And of any crimes that we should be looking at and prosecuting vigorously, crimes committed that target our political systems and processes, that attempt to place the rich and powerful above the law, should be the crimes of the highest priority. Our justice system has misallocated its resources to target all kinds of, frankly, misdemeanor-ish crimes that don't strike at the heart both the sanctity of our democratic system and our overall societal safety levels, right? And these are the sorts of crimes that all attention should be given. So I hope they throw as many people at this as they need to try to keep the pace up here and avoid getting into the situation where you might have a potential sitting president and a DOJ that has to withhold charges because of that.
Maggie Dawn, I can give you 30 seconds for your grievance of the day, sister.
Oh, my grievance of the day.
30 seconds, don't forget.
The Wisconsin Republicans now making hay about the fact that they can impeach and remove judges and district attorneys. It's a dark day when that occurs.
Maggie, always a great day when you join us here on the Devil's Advocates.
Thanks, Maggie. I'll be at the coin in 10 minutes.
Sounds good, guys. Y'all take care.
Maggie, have a wonderful weekend. Too. Everyone have a wonderful weekend, including our fine guest, James Santel. He goes live tomorrow morning, 9 to 11. Tune in on the Civic Media app. Then Badgers kick off at 11. They're going to beat the Cornhuskers. I guess I owe you 20 clams.
It's all right, man. Don't worry about it.
Good luck collecting them.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great weekend. Native Roots Radio. Then Heathman Brothers going out in Madison, giving you all the Packer recap of a sad loss, brutal loss to the Titans.
Glorious clams.
That's a great idea.